Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with Billy Wildrick. She is performing as part of an ensemble cast in Das Barbecue, which is currently playing at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. Das Barbecue is a very, very unique production. It is a comedy, a musical, a takeoff, a compilation of the Wagner opera, The Ring Cycle. And Billy's life, which she will talk about in this interview, is interesting in and of itself. This is a very, very compelling story. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Psychotherapist and been in practice for in excess of 30 years, I am continually surprised, by the fact that people arrive at my doorstep trying to become someone they already are, to develop capacities they already have. But of course, they don't know it. That's what being in denial means. It means that there is something there, but your unconscious has covered it over. So even though it is very clearly there, you don't know it. Why would anyone be in denial for important aspects of themselves? Well, of course, that's the work of therapy, to figure out why any particular person had to hide, deny, ignore some important part of themselves. But generally speaking, I believe that we understand very clearly, as very, very tiny children, what does and doesn't work in our family of origin. And we find ways very, very quickly to first pretend we don't have those things, then deny them, and then forget. When I use the word denial, I actually mean we have forgotten. Our unconscious has hidden it so well that we no longer are aware of the fact that these things are us. That we have figured out a way, convinced ourselves, that we are not whatever it is that would not have gone down so well in our family of origin. This is always a coping mechanism. This is always a survival skill. Unfortunately, very often, precisely those qualities which we needed to deny in order to survive our childhood are things which we badly need to enjoy our adulthood, to make the most of the life that we are capable of living. So, I spend most of my time as a therapist helping people surface, access, recover aspects of themselves which they have had to deny and which they thought they lost. I do all of that work on the telephone now. So if you are interested in coming into psychotherapy and you either don't want to go to an office or can't get to an office, you might want to check out an article I wrote on my website, which is called Therapy on the Go. And in order to find my website, you need to go to thelynnshow.com. thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynnshow.com. On my website, you will find the article called Therapy on the Go. You will also find access to the book I wrote, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. And also, you will hear, if you like, any of the shows that I have done. They're all up there in podcast form, and there are directions about how to download them to the variety of things to which we can now download. So if you want to take them with you in the car or listen to them at night, as some people I know do, the website will tell you how to do that. There's a link to email me. So if you want to talk to me or you have a question or a comment or you want to tell me something about a show that you listen to or anything at all, click email me and tell me. Now, the thing I do in the show, beside talking about how we deny aspects of ourselves and how to recover them, is I play interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because in order to do that in this culture, at least in your work, that has to be who you really are. Because making a life with an art in our culture is so difficult. So the people who do it, they are it. And you hear it in all the interviews. And this interview with Billy Wildrick from Das Barbecue is not only no exception. She's a poster child. Billy is someone who has spent so much of her life exploring her life. She isn't your typical actor performer, as you will hear her talk about. And because of that, she's had to find ways to do this thing which is instinctive to her in her DNA, but not to do it the way everybody else does it. And she has found many ways to do that, and that is a really interesting story. And before I play the interview, I'm going to play a little bit of Billy singing a song called Thought the Mountain. Playing guitar behind her is Josh Carter, who is one of her co-stars in Das Barbecue. So here is Thought the Mountain, and following that, my interview with Billy Wildrick.
Listen to me now. I'm a walking through the mountain on a bearskin rug. Through the great halls you dream of and tell of so often, I'ma take you by the hand and with a gentle tug, we'll be gone. will be long gone as we follow along the dance to the outside. As we follow along the diamonds to the outside.
Ooh. I am here with Billy Wildrick in a rehearsal space in Florida Studio Theater. And Billy is here starring as part of the ensemble of Dust Barbecue, correct?
That is true. All true.
Good. which I saw. And she's remarkable. Oh. Just remarkable. It's a wonderful, wonderful performance.
Thank you.
We're very happy to have you here.
Thank you.
So I interview people who make their living or their life within art. Mm-hmm. And I think it is clear that an art that you have given your life to, or because you must have given a lot of your life to it to be as good at it as you are.
That's very kind.
Is theater, acting, singing, all of the above?
Yeah, I would say the performing arts, the arts that you have to be in a room and experience together.
I ask one question, and that is, how did it get started for you? What was the very first moment in your life that it occurred to you that performing was attractive, interesting, compelling?
I'll tell you, I can't remember a time in my life where I didn't make up stories and immerse myself in them, like becoming characters. Oh. And I certainly don't remember a time in my life where singing wasn't 50% of my day, what I would do. Reportedly, I sang Summertime before I could walk. It was like a party trick, and my dad would carry me down, and I couldn't pronounce my S's, so it's Summertime, and the women of Evie. Fisher jumping in the cotton's too tight, I think, was my lyric change there. I used to put on entire musicals, the Brown Album of Jesus Christ Superstar. I knew that thing front to back when
okay,
I was
how old
4 years old.
4 years old, right.
Yeah, it was the first thing I knew front to back, and my sister and I would put on entire productions of Jesus Christ Superstar starring our stuffed animals.
So, this is how I hear it. I hear that you are naturally attracted to the idea of stories, that you like to lose yourself in the stories, and that you love to sing, and that this is the beginning. This is always there as far as you're concerned. And that you get support from your father, who stands you up and says, do it for these people, right? He brings you down, you're raising your eyebrows. So what, was that difficult for you, scary?
That was the moment where it would seize up, when I was told to perform for people. That terrified me. The moment it became, do that trick that you do.
So doing that stuff with your sister, that was fine.
Yeah.
What was comfortable about that was that you were immersed, right? The animals were the stars, essentially,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And so you were not the out front.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't on the block.
Right, exactly. On the block. My God. Well, yeah, that must have been how it felt, and I imagine that is the thing that you have been dealing with, is that it feels like it's on the block. Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, when was the first time you recognized that performance for an audience was like being on the block? But you just said that when you were four and your father took you out there, you shut down, or you froze, or you got scared, or you had some adverse response.
Well, when my parents would hold me before I could walk and sing Summertime, I don't even remember. Apparently I did it freely.
Yes.
I remember being at a party. I was doing a little bit of children's theater, and I was happy to do it.
How old are we?
We're between 7 and 9.
Okay.
And I loved going on stage. I loved being a part of the ensemble almost more than anything. That was what I knew, to be part of a story, and I can take on this role. But going to theater parties, you know, my parents were there, and all the adults were there, and they would want me to perform. But I was being asked and asked, but I just was freezing up under the pressure of I could fail at this moment, I think. So finally I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'll. So I think I tried to do it, and I shook. I used to have it. My vibrato was so fast because I would just shake when I had to do these pressure situations.
It seems like you're saying that your parents didn't really understand the price that it was costing you.
Nobody did. And to this day, I'm a Leo rising.
Oh, you know?
No, I seem so sure and confident.
I know. I saw you on stage.
And yeah, people right. take for granted that at the very least that it's easy and I'm confident. At the worst, that I'm so confident, you know, that
I
don't deserve to be so confident. And my whole school career was about teachers taking me down a peg when all I wanted was support and mentorship. But however it is that I present myself in the world, what I get back is you don't need any help.
Well, you're beautiful and you're talented.
You know,
I mean, it's not rocket science, you know, and I'm quite sure that you always were. Unfortunately, that doesn't generally generate what you were looking for. It generates what you got.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting problem for you. I mean, you have this thing which is, you know, instinctive to you, natural to you, a part of your DNA, you know, and you clearly want to do it, and what you get is a lot of discouragement in a lot of ways. So how did you keep doing it?
A speech therapist at my elementary school noticed that I dressed in full costume for every holiday. And he suggested that I try this children's theater. And my mom says, great, she takes me, and I take to it.
Right.
To the point that, you know, an agent came in from New York and was taking a look at some kids. He tells a couple of us that he'd love us to come to New York and try some auditions. And my mom's getting a little uncomfortable, but I'm doing well. I sang at the Michigan Opera Theater in Carmen and part of the children's chorus and, you know, starting to stretch outside the children's theater a little
bit. So at this point, you're okay with it?
I'm okay because mostly I'm in shows. Solo, when people demand me to do things, or at auditions, I would shake like a leaf. But it was what I had to do to be in the play.
Right.
And being in the play was so immersive.
Right. That you were fine.
It wasn't a problem.
Okay.
So I'm apparently interesting enough to this agent. Did some commercial auditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really have been super interested in learning lines. I learn the language of a character that I want to play quite happily. But just learning lines about a non-story that sells something that doesn't interest me.
So are you saying that you were not screamingly successful?
I was close. There were, you know, some close calls with GE, and I was almost the kid in me loves the frosty side, you know? but my mom watched a few things happen there. Mom's like, no. So we were done. And so then I was done with that part for a while. I only did stuff in school. I was in the choir. I was swim team captain.
You were a kid.
Yeah, I lived a life, which I'm endlessly grateful for now. Because if you learn how to act from watching actors, all you know how to do is reproduce the stereotypes and interacting with those real people.
Right.
Which the theater community gets so insular.
Mm-hmm.
You no longer meet real people. You know?
Yes, I do. Okay. So now you go through high school as a regular kid,
mm-hmm.
and are you thinking of what you might do for a living, or do you have any plans?
I never stopped singing. I never stopped performing. It just stopped being the path and the focus. And I'm editing the yearbook, and I'm thinking, maybe I'll be a journalist. But I think all the time I probably was still on that path. This is just, it's just such an innate part of who I am.
You know, I forgot, and I wanted to ask you, when you said the teachers tried to take you down a peg, can you give me an example of that?
Sure. My sophomore year in high school, I created what I called the variety show. I was getting, you know, all sorts of different acts to do at the little Performing Arts Center. And I was doing it all myself. And I was told I needed to have an advisor, so I talked to this woman. It's so funny. If I saw her from where I am now in my life, I'm sure she would appear very different to me. I'm sure she would be more like the girl who wanted to be a cheerleader.
Yes.
And was determined to become a teacher so she could be popular and hang out with the cheerleader.
Right.
I feel
right.
for her. At the time, I'm putting this whole thing together. I'm working my little tail off.
Right.
It's exciting. Kids are excited.
Right.
But it's a little unwieldy because it's kids. I've got a headset. I've got right. a crew. I'm running this thing. I'm printing programs. The whole thing happens. The bands are loud. Kids, no one gets hurt. Nothing goes badly. You know, it's a little bit chaotic at the money-taking area, and it just is out of her control, and she freaks out, and I get reprimanded severely and told I can never do this again. It was a wild success. And she was angry with me, and I had to sit in the principal's office and be told how I didn't follow this rule or that rule, and I needed to get guidance here and there. And this was great.
Right.
This was exciting. Right. This was the sort of thing that, you know, a teacher would latch onto and say, how wonderful that you're doing this. Let me help you do this. Let me help you do this. She didn't want to help me do anything.
Right.
She was threatened. She was,
right.
you know, I was out of her control. Right. So she slaps me on the wrist.
Right.
But the following 2 years, I managed to get an outside sponsor. There was a group, they were called YES, I think the Youth Entertainment Society, opened up, and I got them to rent the pack. Instead of putting the money into my class's ASB, it went to this outside. So I, like, conquered.
So, okay, so you graduate from high school, then what happens?
I run off to Roosevelt University in Chicago, and that's where my parents were born, and we had family there. And I was going for musical theater. That was my major, and it was a lot to be away from home, and I wanted to try everything and do everything, and by the end of the year, I was a total mess. I wanted to go home. So I went back and skipped up to Bellingham, to Western Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they didn't have a musical theater program. So, but they had, and this is what attracted me, this hippie college where you could design your own major.
Ah.
So I designed this really pretentious major with a colon in it. And it was called Performance, colon, Becoming the Artist and the Instrument. And I pulled classes from the theater department, from the music department, and did that, and did some musicals, and did some Shakespeare, and sang in the choir, and avoided math, you know, and finished college without ever having to take a math class. It was really impressive. That's my most impressive accomplishment. Had I, after that, not gone, I went straight down to Seattle, and I did the general auditions for a few things, the Fifth Avenue Theater being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got immediately plunked up by this little theater called the Oregon Cabaret Theater in Ashland, Oregon, where the Oregon Shakespeare Festival is. And I, like, immediately, within a month, I was working. Well, you know, non-equity, but professional
right.
situation. They're paying me good money, and
right.
they're putting me up. And I get a call right as soon as I get down there that the Fifth Avenue really liked my audition. They'd like to see me. I'm like,
right,
I'm in Oregon. I don't really know what to do. So I doctored together this video of a senior project I did, this senior cabaret I did in college, of, and I, you know, I had one of these clamshell lime green iBook.
Uh-huh.
And I had iMovie. And this is my grandfather's, this is my mom's dad's legacy to me. He died shortly before that, but he left money. And I bought the computer, and I bought a camera with which I recorded this thing. So I am in the theater because of my grandpa. It's just true. And I sat in that little room they're putting me up in, working out this, like, you know, a little spliced version of me mm-hmm. singing these songs, the little, like, MTV titles in the corner, and there's crossfades. And at the end, I do my headshots, like, in this...
like a slide?
Slideshow thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, and over top, I'm singing that song from Nonsense, I Just Want to Be a Star. And I'm putting all my contact information. I send this thing off.
Right.
And Bill Berry, who's still at the Fifth Avenue Theater, was so delighted by this chutzpah and
right.
what this thing was, that he says, this is great. We really need to see you live.
Right.
Okay, so I'm 9 hours from Seattle. I get off the show on Monday, get in my car, I drive 9 hours. I audition on Tuesday. They sing me through my whole book, like 9, 12 songs, something. They just, okay, what else do you have? What else do you have? And I'm singing, and I'm exhausted. I drive back, I start doing the shows, and they call me and cast me in Hair. And they put me on their school tour, their weekly paycheck, and the, you know, it's a WCLO contract, so I was making money. I was just like right out of college. And I'll do my 21st show for the Fifth Avenue in December. God. And had they not seen something in me and scooped me up and started casting me and given me a chance, I don't think I'd be doing it today. Because I don't thrive in a competitive environment. I thrive in a nurturing environment because what I'm doing is expressive. It is not competitive. I don't want to be the skinniest, or maybe I do way too much and I don't know how to handle that pressure. I don't want to be the, lined up with a bunch of people and chosen. I just want to
sing and do the work. Right.
And that's not, the business as it exists is not conducive to that. They really lifted me up. And, everyone wants to work at the Fifth Avenue. And now the Fifth Avenue has a link to Broadway like you wouldn't believe. So I've gotten to work with these incredible people who come out and work. And yet, I get to live my life in Seattle. So it's working out. It was working out. Put it that way. It was working out really well. Until, I'm getting to the age where I'm starting to think, okay, do I want to be 50 and have no children and be still chasing the work? There will never be any promises here. And you're getting nothing but, you're going to go in and out of castability. And it's, you don't have the fire to go and compete. If I'm going to stay in, I have to go to New York because I have to land some sort of bigger thing to make myself more attractive and to make more money so that I can squirrel money away so I can have a house and a family.
Right.
I go to New York and it's a bad place for me. My first audition, and this is when I start having anxiety attacks. I was always a calm person. I'd shake at auditions, but I wasn't a panic attack person. I go to New York, I start having full anxiety attacks. I can't go to an audition and sing with my own voice. It's just, I implode under this kind of situation, this 16-bar pressure. And ironically, the first audition I do is Sam Bunrock's Sunday in the Park with George, the one that came from the West End. And, it's a long shot. I figure I'm not going to do it, but I do such a horrible audition. It's this horrible experience. I'm like, I have come here to do this as many times a week as I possibly can and maybe be, and that's the only show I auditioned for in the 6 months I'm there that I even wanted to be in. And it's just miserable. So I decide I'm a big failure. I'm obviously going to have to quit the theater. This is it. I have failed because I have to go home. I just can't do this. And I go home. Immediately, I get a call to audition for Into the Woods at the Fifth. Bless them. And within a year, I take a regular job. I take this corporate job that, I don't fit in a cubicle.
Right.
Metaphorically, right. Literally, no cube can contain
you.
The craziness.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, well, I can fit in this show and take a regular job and become a, I just need to make money, and then maybe I can just open a theater company. Maybe I can go at it from this angle and still have this be a part of my life. Maybe I just am a failure as a performer. I have peaked. So I take this job, and it's okay. It's not great, and I'm doing theater on the side. And I do a wonderful Into the Woods, and it's one of the bigger roles I've had. And I'm at my cubicle, and I get a call that I'm to audition for the role of Dot in Sam Bunrock's Sunday in the Park with George. And it was the strangest thing. And I go and I do this long, intensive audition. Weeks later, I'm sitting in my cubicle again. And the phone rings. And I'm cast. Opposite gorgeous Hugh Panaro. Directed, this is an amazing piece of theater that has come against
you.
All odds.
To you.
To me.
That's right.
And it was the first audition I did in New York. I'm like, okay, what?
What? Right.
What is going on?
Well, but I mean, this has happened before. The grandpa thing, Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
Right? This has happened to you.
They keep delivering me back.
It keeps happening for you.
Yeah.
You can't make it happen, but it keeps happening for you. So, okay, so you, it's great. So you do this, right?
So I do this. I do Sunday in the Park, and it's a revelation. It is a big moment in my life. I do this, and it's life-changer because, you know, when you have a dream of some sort, and you actually chase it, and you actually get it, and then you look around, and you realize nothing
has changed. Right? I know.
So I put it recently to a friend. It's like, you know, you win a Tony, and then you go home, and you still have to poop.
That's right.
What is going on? And that's a wonderful gift of perspective.
It can go both ways. It sounds like, for you, it went wonderfully. You can find value in your life without the dream. I mean, you know, that you can say, yay, dreams are great, but that isn't what makes my life worth living, which is what it sounds like you did. Am I getting this wrong?
No, that's just right. You realize it's not just over that ridge anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Because it's right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And it takes certain amounts of ridges and, you know, it's just over there. Okay, no, it's just over there.
Right.
And once you realize, it's not over there.
It's right here.
I know. It does give you a certain amount of calm.
Yeah.
And that was a wonderful time. And right after that, I did Das Barbecue. I auditioned for it. I think before I even started Sunday in the Park, the auditions popped up. I was really excited. It was the first time I was working for ACT Theater.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of work at the Fifth, and they do some pre-casting, so I ended up saying no to a lot of auditions. And I was excited to expand myself and, ACT does more straight plays. And this wasn't a straight play, but they do more straight plays. So I'm at least in their world. And it's a wonderful world. It's a wonderful building and a wonderful organization. What they do is awesome over there. So I'm thrilled. And I come out of Sunday in the Park, you know, breathing new oxygen of I'm an adult.
Yes.
You know, I've made it.
Right.
And I go into Das Barbecue and I meet Josh Carter on Mesa Rock. And, you know, I'm happy. I'm so happy and I'm so single and I'm so happy to be single. And I look at him and I'm like, oh, God, it's you. You would show up right when I'm happy.
But isn't that how it goes?
That is a Yes, exactly how it goes.
I know.
Oh my God, it's the guy I'm going to marry. Yes!
I was good.
And you know you're in for some tumult. But tumult that you can't possibly say no to.
That's right.
And that was wonderful. But I'm still dealing now because my career has exploded at home in Seattle. I'm back in it.
Right.
I failed to escape. And I'm doing a
you
lot.
You failed to fail.
I failed to fail.
Yes.
I keep trying to fail. And I'm doing a lot of these singing one song in a, you know, you learn it really quick and you sing it at one event sort of things to, you know, subsidize and to support the theater and the community. And to sing.
Right.
But I develop my anxiety disorder that I develop in New York starts to
creep in.
And I cease to be able to sing with my own voice in any of these sorts of situations.
Whose voice do you sing with?
The one that can't really get
I see.
Belt right. over certain, and is so afraid that she forces it, and my body shuts down. My system shuts down, my breathing shuts down, my throat tightens up, and I can't sing with me.
I got it.
And it's awful. I'm thinking about gratitude. I'm trying to self-analyze. I remember that I love to do this, and nothing is helping. And I find a new doctor. I've been kind of avoiding thinking about that. So I certainly didn't want to take any drugs. I wanted to find the love for this again myself. And I go to her for the first time, and I fill out this form, and I have every symptom on it. I check every box. I am depressed. I have stomach problems. My arms go numb. My legs go numb. I'm a wreck. And I go in there. I'm like, I finally had to come in. This is the general wash of symptoms. I know, but I just don't feel good.
Right.
Ever. And she's so smart, and she's so not like any doctor I had been to before. She listens to me for a while, prattle on, and she reads this list. She says, I think we need to start, you know, in one place, and then we'll move on. I think you are so anxious. You're so afraid now of being afraid. It's become like this meta thing that's a real central problem, and we can fix that. I'm like, I'm not going to take any anxiety, blah, blah, blah. She's like, I just, simple beta blocker that she's asking me to take. It's not going to mess with your brain chemistry. And I'm like, she's like, I think we just need to interrupt this pattern for you, because your body has learned, that door has opened, and now it's learned that's where it goes.
Right.
And she's using this language. She's like, only you can use it event specific.
Right.
You know, you can take a very small dose. And it changed my life in a way that I'm still spinning from. That I was singing in a venue and just like exactly
the ones that
terrify me. Okay. And I take one and I can sing. And it just is this whole new world. And now that's something. And I've taken in the last 5 months maybe five of the things. And for some things, I don't take them. I didn't take it for opening night here.
Wow.
I was like, okay, no, I'm good. This one I've got. And just that I have something to do about it is making it so much less likely to trigger. So I go back to the doctor right before I came down here, and I get the same sheet to check, and I don't check anything. She saves my physical self.
Right.
But it's also, that's opened the door for me now to think about, is being an actor, is being a singer, an actor, a performer, it? Or is it time to wander? That gives me the, I'm not trying to prove it anymore. I'm not desperate to hold on to it anymore. It's there. It is what it is. But being an actor is such a self-focused thing, and it has to be.
Yes.
You know, you have to give yourself a lot of love and support and analysis and to do your work. It is your work to turn yourself inside out and allow other people to inhabit you.
Right.
But if that's all you do, and where that meets the business of it, it's not even you can join a company and you'll know that you can work, so you can work on your craft and how to better tell stories, and you can deal with the audience that always comes and help tell their stories.
As opposed to continually trying to get work.
Yeah, which is the actual job, is auditioning. And I hate auditioning. I hate it. But the people who love the work and who are the work, those aren't the people who thrive in the business, sadly. It's the people who thrive on the competition.
You have to be able to go out there and look for it and ask for it and perform your best when you're looking for
it. Yeah, and put yourself on the block.
On the block,
and say, judge me.
Right.
You know?
And
it's gotten so, it's so saturated in New York with actors. There are hundreds of people who could play every role.
That's right.
Just as well. Mm-hmm.
Yes, right.
And
who know the director.
And who know the director. You know,
right.
And all sorts of random things.
Right,
to casting.
Exactly.
So, and you have to feed so much into yourself to keep yourself afloat.
Yes.
With all that. I mean, I've been able to watch safely from the island of Seattle as people come through, you know, and it's a bit of a haven for people who are looking for work in Seattle. And some of the people who are a little older and further along in their careers, some brilliant performers, they just look so tired and so scared.
Yes.
And very few of them, dare I say, none of them have families.
A life.
You know?
Right.
And I can't find my role model in that, because I very much want a family. I don't want to, like, I can't be an actor anymore, I have to have a family.
You're going to have to design the Billy life.
That's exactly where I'm at right,
right.
now.
Yeah.
So my plan for the now, on the computer right,
right
now, is forming what I'm calling the Cordless Moon Generative Artist Collective. That will
this is
run
what you did in high school, that's right? Yeah,
it's exactly what I've always
done.
Right,
right,
I mean,
right,
my
right.
award that I won at theater prom in college was most likely to found her own colony.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a big part of who I am. I have an idea. Other people launch ideas. Why not me? And I think this is the right one. People who want to create their own work in whatever way and want to be part of generative work, that's where my self is. So we'll put on a three or four of these basic fundraising sort of shows a year. It's a full show, but it will act as this fundraising energy, the engine for the collective. And once you've done a few of those, you can apply for a chunk of that money as an internal project grant.
Self-contained.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because the second you say, I need money, someone's going to say, oh, I have money, and here's what I want in return.
Right, right.
But if you're feeding it in because you just want to
be a part of it.
Yeah, whether it's you who gets to continue the art, then maybe the art can flourish.
That's lovely. You have to take the next step, and that this one is it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
And I can see myself, you know, working in the theater, getting the space of a theater, and, you know, having
and having
office.
The headset, and I'm printing the programs.
With my kids running
and your
around
kids
my
running
around.
Exactly right. And then you'll perform.
And then...
Whatever you want.
I'll perform whatever is, yeah, right. And there won't be pressure of I have to get this show and this show and this show, or I won't be able to pay this bill, and I'm
right.
Or I'll stop working if I don't call this person.
Well, what it sounds like is that you've been looking, really, for a way to be Billy in the world, you know? And it's odd because you really are extremely talented. That's not in contention here. And for someone to have the talents that you have, the pressure really is on you to use them in the way that people use those talents. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so the people would be expecting you to pursue a career as a performer.
Have you ever been on American Idol? That's my
favorite. Right. Exactly. And so for you to say, yeah, I do these things great, but they're not all there is to me, or they aren't the thing I want to do, or they aren't the way I want to be in the world, that's harder to do than it is for someone who doesn't have these things. Am I making this point at all?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've never really looked at it that way, but it's true. People want to put you in a box.
Right. And you fit in that box, except that you're more than that
box. Except that myself doesn't.
No, that's right. You're more than that box. You
but people
are more
don't like that. People are uncomfortable.
Yes. It's like your teacher in school. That's correct. And it seems to me that makes it harder for you to resist the temptation to try and do whatever, to go into the box that people seem to think you should be in, and also harder to think of other ways to be, right? Well, I'll be curious to hear how this goes and, you know, what is next on your agenda. But before we stop this, talk about Das Barbecue. How much longer is it running?
Das Barbecue, we have at least 2 more weeks.
Oh, great.
If people get excited, we could have 3 more weeks.
Okay, good. Say something about the show.
Oh, the show is so wonderful. It's close to my heart. Scott Warner is a dear friend of Josh and mine in Seattle. He's such a smart person. I think it's almost hard for Scott to be Scott in the world because he is so deep and
yes.
So smart. And his music is, it can sound deceptively simple on the surface. You can go, oh, I'm having a Texas experience, and then you listen in it, that there's just a depth to some of those songs that is soul-wrenching to
me. Yeah.
The show is fun and funny, but you got to be a little clever, and you got to be on your
and you have to be on your toes, right?
To catch
and it's
the
going
better.
By so fast.
Right.
Oh my God!
You
right.
can catch, you know, so yeah, a lot yeah, of yeah, the yeah. jokes without
right, right.
trying.
Right.
But if you do a little work, if you do a little investing. Mm-hmm. You get a lot more of the jokes, and if you do so much investing that you go out and do a little Googling of Wagner's Ring,
yeah.
which, you know, everyone should anyway.
Yes. Let's say that. Say what it's about. Tell people who haven't come yet.
Oh, right. Das Barbecue is a comic adaptation of Wagner's epic opera, known as The Ring Cycle, which takes a good 14-plus hours
yeah,
to
right.
view. It's
right.
true.
Right.
To sit through, and we do it all
yes, right.
in 90 minutes.
Yes, you do.
And it's wonderful, and it's not just you have to know the ring because we just make fun of it. We retell the story.
Oh, yeah, and at the beginning, you tell it.
Yes.
Right?
We do, well, we pretty much, what we do in the play proper is Götterdämmerung, is the last opera, with a couple of explorations of characters that you met in Das Rheingold
uh-huh.
or Siegfried. But mostly the action of our play is Götterdämmerung. In the beginning,
right.
we tell the first, what is it, 3 operas?
Yes, right.
We tell the first 14 hours
right.
of the story
right.
in the opening number.
Right, right.
Which is
it's
delightful.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, and to recognize that this piece of culture, this central cultural piece of work, is such a crazy story.
Yes, it is. It
But that, there's just fun in that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, if anyone wants to really prep and you know, come intellectually prepared, there is a wonderful Radio Lab, you know, NPR's program Radio Lab.
Yes.
That you can download a free podcast on through iTunes. And they have an episode that's all about The Ring. And it's fun and it's funny, but it gives you a lot of information and snippets of the music. I'd say that is the ideal way.
That's wonderful, because I didn't know it, and I was sorry not to have done a little bit more. I mean, I was sure that I was missing things because I didn't know the story.
They were a little frightened to market it.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
As you need to know this stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's right. I
don't,
often have
and you
difficulty.
Don't need
no, you don't to need know to know it. It and to enjoy it, you don't need to know it. But I was pretty sure that if I knew it, I would be enjoying it on another level. You know?
Yeah, and it's true, and you will. There are 10 different levels. Coming back to this piece, I have found, I mean, you wouldn't, the Brunhilde that hits the stage in this production is totally different in many ways. And I've watched Josh, his character, his Siegfried is very different in many ways than what we did 3 years ago, because the piece is good enough to sustain that sort of stretching and deepening and changing. It's wonderful. The way we meet on Mesa Rock, it's totally different and yet just as electric as it was 3 years ago.
That's
and it's
great.
It's been really fun to explore and be able to not just, okay, well, this is what works here and this is what works here.
Right.
Because the comedy will take care of itself if you really mine the truth. So I love the piece. I think it's incredible.
Good acting is, I think, about being willing to mine the truth. And one has to be someone who wants to mine the truth to really be able to bring from a role what there is to, right? And while you're talking about it, it's clear how much you love to do it, you know? It would be easier if you didn't have so many competing things going on inside of you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, slowly but surely I'm finding that that isn't everybody's story.
No.
You know, when you're young, you expect everyone is like you. Functioning in the world is easy if you can label and box, and it is one of the things that I have always been least comfortable with.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And that's, I'm finding myself steering from the work because, particularly in New York, where it's, the, you know, oh, when are you going to New York? When are you going to New York? Or L.A.? When are you going to L.A.? That's how you work. They say, know your type.
Yeah, right.
Know your box and get in it.
Get in it. Right.
And they don't want to be confused. And it had never occurred to me that by becoming versatile and by being able to do many different things, you know, people ask me, what's your voice type? I don't know. I sing. I'm not a country singer. I'm not a belter. I look at the material and I try my best to put my voice in the service of that material.
To give it what it needs.
Right. But that's not helpful.
No.
When you have a lot of people to choose from in casting a role. It's so, there, this is what you do. And would I want to be that person? Absolutely not. Could I do the same thing over and over and over and over again? Absolutely not. Do I need to pay my rent? Absolutely. So how the place where that business meets the artist, that's just complicated.
But the theater keeps coming back, right? All right, one more question I ask, and that is, having given a whole life to performing, essentially, do you want to just say something about it, what it's like?
I'm troubled regularly by the way that people are becoming desensitized. And people compare theater to movies, but theater is secondary because movies can do it more real. And I think it's two halves. I think it is the fault of the viewer, to some degree, defining real in a one-dimensional way.
Right.
It looks real instead of...
It is real.
Yeah, it is real. And I think it's the fault of the theater makers pursuing, you know, putting the helicopter on stage in
Miss
Saigon,
right.
Taking the humanity... Cameron McIntosh taking the actors off the poster and putting the mask and Cosette and the Asian symbol that is Miss Saigon, and selling the show that doesn't change for 30 years, and people go to see it, and they may or may not know the names of any of the actors, but it doesn't matter, because it's no longer about the actors, it's no longer about the people, and it's and the big business and the money, and we need TV stars to star in this, and we need... Yes. Somewhere between those two things, what is important, what is socially important about storytelling, live interface storytelling, is getting lost. And if you can't tell the difference between somebody getting shot in a movie and somebody getting shot in front of you, I feel like that line is blurring. And kids sit in front of the video games and they kill, and they can watch these horrible things happen to the point that they can watch the most horrible thing happen, and they long for it on reality TV. Right. They watch people get humiliated.
Yes.
And they want
like
it straight in the vein.
Right.
And to me, reality TV is a cry for theater. They want to feel something real, and they have to turn to the most... It's one step away from watching people tortured in the square.
Yes, it is.
Theater makers can take a step
right
towards the audience, and the audience can take a step towards the theater and say, look, I will suspend my disbelief, but here's what I need from you to do that.
Right.
I think the money question, you know, getting big producers who, of course, want to protect their money, and of course want to say, I want a sure thing. This person looks nothing like the person who did it in the movie. I can't do that, you know. This person is, you know, 5-10 pounds too heavy, yada, yada. I think that question can go away, because I really do think theater serves society. You know, I've talked about how making a whole life as an actor allows for no service, and that is a dangerous thing to do with your life, to not be of service at all. And thus Cordless Moon, because I feel like I need to get out of myself and give... Selfishly, I think my soul will implode if I can't be of service.
And that's a great place to stop. Thank you very much, Billy.
Thank
Come
you,
and
Lynn.
See Das Barbecue.
So, there you have it. Billy Wildrick, a constantly, continually evolving human being who was able to pursue her dream, follow her dream, attempt for her dream, and then when it looked as though her dream had fizzled, turned around and done something else, and then turned around and done something else, and then allowed the universe to drag her back to the theater, and now to be thinking about doing something she did in high school, to be continually looking inside to see who's there. And of course, that is the theme of the Lynn Show, that what you've done, who you've been, who you think of yourself as, who other people tell you you are, or who other people tell you you should be, need to be, have to be, ought to be, that's not necessarily the truth. It ain't necessarily so. And the answers are inside. They're not outside. They're inside. And one can continue. It doesn't actually matter. You know, you're 10, you're 20, you're 40, you're 60. There are still possibly aspects of yourself which you have not yet allowed to flourish, not yet accessed, may still be in denial for, but that denial doesn't mean it isn't there. However, I always like to caution, when you have had to deny a quality, an aspect of yourself, there was a very good reason for that. And when you begin to recognize it, become aware of it, want to access it, there may be a cost. There may be a price. In my book, When You Can, You Will, there's a whole chapter on the price and the payoff. And so I don't like to mislead people that, oh, well, I just discovered that I'm really quite assertive and watch me roar. There may very well be a price for that assertiveness, even while the capacity to be assertive is saving your life. So, again, I encourage you to consider the possibility that there are parts of yourself which you may not yet have benefited from. And if you want to know more about that, as I said, I think there's a chapter from my audiobook that you can actually listen to on my website. But if you don't want to do that, just pay attention to yourself. Ask yourself, what would I be if I could? And have I seen even a hint of that inside myself? Well, all right. I'm rapidly running out of time here. And so I must thank, as always, Josh Hackney, who, as you know, the cliche says, without whom there would not have been a show. And whenever I get into trouble, it is Josh that I call. So if you have any issues with computer, with electronics, with recording, you just want to talk to a kind and generous guy, you want Josh Hackney. And you can get him by going up on my website, thelynnshow.com, and clicking on Email Me and saying, I want Josh, and I'll get him for you. So as always, I hope you heard something that you could use in this show. Something you didn't know, something you knew but had forgotten, even just the enjoyment of listening to Billy Wildrick sing, because I'd like you to come back, as I will be here next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray, always in my face. And figure I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going. On singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper I may have got good.